The whole tokenize everything thing so far is one fast hype train. It is exciting not for the technical efficiencies it may provide, but for the exact opposite. Rent seekers seeking rent. Actually, between the lines, some projects seem to suggest to everyone, you too can be a rent seeker. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else. You freaking know. Proof of work, baby. Check that episode list. we've got a short one today. This one is by Nico. I feel like I've read something. This is from his Substack. I feel like I've read something from Nico before. But I could be wrong. I know I've at least read through numerous things by him in the past, just at least through my candidates list. If I have not done Nico on the show, well, then this is the first time. But somebody else is going to have to do the search. I've got too many reads now to be bothered to figure that out. But this is a really great one. I just kind of stumbled upon this one yesterday sometime and just read right through it. And I was like, man, this is a great one because we haven't covered this idea in a while, and I actually have seen it resurface recently, just like Nico says. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. It's amazing how much FUD and how many stupid, like, arguments from like 2013 and 2014 regurgitated over and over again in every single cycle. And I really thought the tokenize everything and the utility token stuff I thought it was dead in 2017. I really thought that would be the last time I heard about it. And I think it's kind of disappeared from retail in a lot of the ways, but it persists. So because it won't die, we are going to cover it one more time, probably again later, but with this great little article from Nico's Substack. So we will go ahead and get right into it, but I just want to thank our sponsors really quick. And you know who they are? Because they're so freaking great. We've got CoinKite, the solution to all of your Bitcoin hardware problems. Keep your Bitcoin safe. Actually own them. Hold your own keys. The cold card MK4. Plus, you get a discount with code BitcoinAudible. Link in the show notes. And of course, Swan Bitcoin, the best onboarding experience in the space. And do not forget about Pacific Bitcoin Conference. I'm getting to see inside on the speakers, the lineup, everything that's planned, and it's going to be awesome. I'm really, really stoked about this one. 10% off your tickets with code Bitcoin Audible. And then lastly, Fold. The only way to do fiat is when you get paid in sats to use that awful crap. Do it the Fold way. Use the Fold debit card. Link in the show notes and discounts, obviously, with code Bitcoin Audible. All right. With that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, No, We Are Not Going to Tokenize Everything by Nico Jilch. Value will flow into Bitcoin. Not some digital token standing in for a tiny digital piece of a London condo. Sometimes I forget how slow things are in the real world. I'm sure many of you will remember the good old days of 2017 when we were told that, quote, everything will be tokenized. Well, 5 years later, not many people in crypto still stick to that line. But when you talk to bankers, they still just love the idea. Gives them something to do, a project, something to work on for a few years. Real estate on the blockchain, stocks on the blockchain, bananas on the blockchain. You get the picture. I don't think this is going to happen, at least not in the way it is marketed now. Sure, there might be some minor uses, just like NFTs might be useful in some circumstances in the future. For concert tickets, maybe. And maybe blockchain can help somewhere in the back end, in the fields of security, storage, and custody. What is that? Not exciting enough? Well, that's my point. The whole tokenize everything thing so far is one fast hype train. It is exciting not for the technical efficiencies it may provide, but for the exact opposite. Rent seekers seeking rent. Actually, between the lines, some projects seem to suggest to everyone, you too can be a rent seeker. The multiply everything by two scam. The simpler minds fall for the very first trap. Let's call it the multiply everything scam. This, of course, was only implied. If everything gets tokenized on some smart contract chain, shouldn't you get some of the native token? The value flowing into the system will surely pump it, no? Well, no. This is how the Midjourney AI sees real estate tokenized. Insert image generated by Midjourney that is literally of a city on fire. Even if you manage to tokenize houses, condos, art, and bananas, their value doesn't magically multiply by two to pump your shitcoin. Actually, there is an argument to be made that the value gets diminished. Buying a small piece of a condo is not the same thing as buying a condo. Same goes for tokenized art. You don't own a whole thing, just a digital token that, in the best case, will give you ownership of a small part. But there's nothing really to do with that small part, other than trading it on some exchange. Let's say 100 people own a condo. It's not like they can all live there, right? So you have to rent it out or sell it to make money. You can sell your individual piece, sure, but only to people who want to be in the same situation as you are. You're not a real estate investor. You just own an NFT that lets you LARP as one. How are you going to decide on a new tenant? A f***ing DAO? With stocks, it might be different. In theory, it could be a good idea to tokenize stock ownership. But even if we get rid of all the red tape that would prevent an efficient system, the outcome wouldn't be what shitcoin investors and bankers hope. This would only be feasible if it lowers the cost of entrance for the investors, so the rent seekers would get even less. The Oracle problem and lost keys. And we haven't even mentioned the fact that the Oracle problem cannot be solved. If real estate gets tokenized, who's going to check if the house you're buying even exists? What if the bananas rot away? They still, quote, exist on the blockchain, but turn to dirt in the real world. You need to introduce a trusted third party. Actually, more than one. What if I lose the key to my token that proves my ownership of 1/100th of a condo or piece of art? I'm obviously screwed, but so are the other 99 investors. Nobody will ever own the whole thing again, right? And if real ownership is impossible, wouldn't the price of the asset suffer? I think that the tokenize everything story is just another variant of all shitcoin stories. There is some truth to the narrative, but the solutions that are offered so far are all basically scams, either on purpose or by accident. This is how Midjourney sees the Mona Lisa tokenized. Oh, and don't forget about Bitcoin. Now here is the death blow. Even if all the stories of the tokenize everything crowd will turn out to be true, even if all the technical problems are solved, and the condo that's been divided into 100 pieces somehow retains the same market value as one that is still whole, even if unicorns are discovered in the Amazon rainforest and start doing infomercials shilling tokenization, there is still a gigantic elephant in the room that we do need to talk about. We need to talk about the actual reason why people would invest their money in real estate, art, stock indices, and the like. The reason is called store of value. We need to understand that many people are only in the market because the money is broken, and therefore not feasible as a long-term store of value. This has pushed the prices of stocks, real estate, art, and many more asset classes for decades. Now, one thing is true. The value that is stored in many asset classes today will absolutely be digitally tokenized, but it will flow into Bitcoin. Bitcoin was created to solve the problem that led to all the investment in generic asset classes in the first place. Bitcoin has none of the above-mentioned problems that tokenized stuff has. It is a purely digital asset, If you buy real estate, metals, sneakers, or stocks just to store value, why should you ever go into the tokenized versions of these assets? There is simply no reason to do so. Actually, even the original untokenized version of the asset suddenly looks inferior. In the long run, you will get out completely and get into the vastly supreme alternative, Bitcoin. All the while, poor suckers are being told that they too can finally own 1/1000th of a London townhouse. Sad, really. All right, and that concludes Nico's piece. No, we will not tokenize everything. I thought this was really fun. I just stumbled upon this yesterday or whatever, and I was immediately like, this will be a great little episode. So let's take a break really quick. I will hit our sponsor, and then I want to jump back in and do a guy's take on this. I don't know how many times I've said it, but I'm never going to stop saying it. Hold your own freaking keys. Hardware wallets are not that difficult to use. I know it's a little bit unfamiliar at first, but if you are still holding your Bitcoin on an exchange after watching what has happened and you have not gotten a cold card or anything else, but the cold card is going to get you a discount and you're going to support the show, and it's just one of the best wallets out there, hands down. CoinGuide has been Bitcoin only since 2011. They have made so many great hardware devices and things for the space. They've got the OpenDime, they've got the Block Clock, they've got the Tap Signers, which are really, really cool. They're really great for multi-sig with the NFC, and the Cold Card MK4, the newest model of the Cold Card, is super versatile. Not only do you have the traditional air-gapped use via the SD card, you can plug it in with USB-C and activate that, and you can use it via NFC. You can literally tap the cold card to your phone and transfer and sign transactions. And it's going to keep your Bitcoin safe. It's going to keep your keys safe so they never touch an internet-connected device. They are in cold storage on your cold card, protected from hackers, protected from malicious apps, so that you know they are yours. You own those Bitcoin, and they are securely stored not on the internet, but on your cold card. Protect those keys. Get yourself a cold card. Discount for not only just the cold card, but discount on everything in the store. 5% with code BitcoinAudible. I will have link in the show notes so you can go check it out. With that, let's jump back in. All right. So the first thing I actually want to do is push back on Nico's claim that NFTs might be used for something. I'm not actually shitting on Nico here, but I too have tried to think about like what you could actually use an NFT for that made sense. And he mentions for concert tickets, maybe, obviously without a whole lot of conviction, but I've tried to dig into this myself, like trying to steel man the argument for NFTs. And as the best analogy I can come up with, which I mentioned a number of times on the show, is that a signed poster of Brad Pitt is worth more than a poster of Brad Pitt, right? And essentially what an NFT is a digital signature. And if there was some way that you could prove or you could know that because of this particular digital signature for this movie or something, you know, like this Brad Pitt hit, this blockbuster film was, it's this poster, it's this movie, and this Brad Pitt signed 200 of this thing at this one point. Okay, you've got a case for something that's more valuable than just having a poster or just having the thing. But the idea that this is going to be worth tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, with the sheer idiocy of the NFT market today, especially considering that NFTs as they stand right now aren't even that. They're not even a digital signature. Which, what's the market really for like signed posters? But, you know, going back to that, that's the best thing I can come up with that I feel like steelmans the argument for, okay, we want to have on-blockchain scarcity for the sake of being able to prove that it's scarce. And the other one's just like straight baseball cards, you know, like truly just digital collectibles for like a digital game or something. And I actually wondered if concert tickets were going to be one of those as well. But when you really think about that's purely if you wanted to, quote-unquote, collect the concert tickets. And I actually do collect, quote-unquote, concert tickets. But what's funny is that, like, I collect them in, like, my Apple wallet. Like when I end up getting the digital version from, like, Ticketmaster or something. Like, I save a ton of physical tickets, like movie stubs and those things, like, things like that, even though you don't really get them anymore. It's kind of sad. I like to collect little stupid crap like that. But I still do actually like going through the digital copies that I have. But the funny thing is, like, I have the digital copies. And there's absolutely no reason that I need this thing on a blockchain for why I want to keep it. In fact, there's this dynamic about using NFTs for something like concert tickets is that you have to submit, if it's on a blockchain, to prove scarcity. You don't need to prove that you've got a specific seat in a concert outside of trusting the concert venue. If they sell more tickets than they have seats, the problem has nothing to do with whether or not you could prove that that happened on a blockchain. You still have to trust the number of seats that they made and the number of seats that they sold. If they're issuing a token, the scarcity doesn't provide any benefit to you. Purely, the only thing that you could get out of it is the fact that you could quote-unquote collect them. But then all you need is a receipt. That's what a ticket stub was. That's what a ticket always has been. It was just a receipt. Why would it be better if you had to pay like $20 on some smart contract blockchain system, which it doesn't even need a smart contract to make an NFT. It's like absolute basic nothing. You just stick some standardized formatting thing into the op return of a Bitcoin transaction or Ethereum, whatever the heck it is. It doesn't really matter. But why would it be better to have it slow and expensive to move this thing around? Why would it be better to cost more and be more of a hassle to get your concert tickets than it already is? We've solved the digital concert ticket problem. And it's also important to understand there's an element, and I think we talked about this in the lessons we learned from BitTorrent, I believe is where, man, maybe that was a different piece. I don't know. That's a great series either. Anyway, it's a four-part series by Simon Morris, who worked for the BitTorrent Incorporated back in the day. But regardless, if this idea didn't come from his pieces, they're really, really good, and I highly recommend listening to them. What was I talking about? Oh, there's a dynamic. This is something that is a problem with NFT. This is a problem with blockchain everything. Thinking that you're going to tokenize things and put them on a blockchain suggests that there's some benefit that overrides the fact that it gets worse as it scales. So this is kind of the element of a peer-to-peer network and a decentralized system. It's one of the critical things about a network effect in a system that works like that, is that the thing that you're going to get, the thing that you are going to that protocol or that network in order to achieve, must get better as it scales. So a good example is BitTorrent. The more people join BitTorrent, the more files and the more peers and the faster everything responds. Same thing with like what's happening with Keet and Synonym. This is why I'm super excited about these things that we've talked about. I have the link in the show notes to the episode. I've been geeking out about them, so I'm sorry if it comes up in every single show. But as it scales, as more people join, it gets better. You have more peers, there's better persistence, it operates, it does its job better and better as more and more people join the system. The same is true for Bitcoin, but that's also how you know that Bitcoin's raison d'etre, it's like core value-added functionality, is not transactions. It's not cheap, fast transactions, because that's not what Bitcoin does. And it's also not what Bitcoin does at scale. The more people who use it, the more expensive it gets, and the slower it gets to get a confirmation. So why would more people use it? What does it provide that scales as more and more people join it? One, security. Security and decentralized independence. The fact that it is censorship resistant, the fact that no state can shut it down. Every time you get a new node, every time you get a new business in another jurisdiction, every time you get a new lightning node, a new miner in, you know, some other distant place on the planet that is burning energy in order to secure the network and increase the hash wall from corrupting and altering the history of this system, the more powerful its settlement is. the higher the assurance that you own what you own according to what Bitcoin tells you is, the more undeniable your property rights in the Bitcoin system are as more people join. That is the ultimate value. And what does that do? It ensures that you have an absolute portion of an uncorruptible monetary system. It stores value. It is the highest assurance, incorruptible promise of what you own in any monetary network in the world today. Bitcoin does that. And the more people who join it, the more solid that promise becomes. And its value and its security and its decentralization actually exist in a feedback loop. An increase in one results in an increase in the other. The more people who join it, the more valuable it becomes. The price, because it is 21 million and nobody can create any more Bitcoin, an increase in demand for the Bitcoin unit cannot result in an increase in the supply. The supply is set in stone. It is set in digital stone. It cannot be changed. And the reason it cannot be changed is because so many people have joined the network and run the infrastructure and mined for the coins. But this, because these new people join, it increases the value because the price is the only thing that can adjust. It's the only thing that fluctuates on the market. Supply doesn't. Therefore, its value goes up, which entices more people to join the network, both to get the unit, to store it their value in the Bitcoin unit and trust the Bitcoin promise, but also because they want to run additional nodes, because they want to mine, because now it is more profitable to run the security program, to run the algorithm that defends Bitcoin's history, which makes Bitcoin more trustworthy, which makes more people value it and trust it and join the network, etc., etc. All of this is to say that what Bitcoin provides scales with the number of people who join, just like any peer-to-peer decentralized network. And if it doesn't, then it's dead in the water. If it doesn't get better the more people join, it's never going to accomplish what it does. It's never going to be used for what it does. So what does an NFT do if everybody makes their NFT and makes their concert tickets NFTs? Does it work better if there's 30 people making NFTs for their concert tickets than one? No, fees go up. Fees go up. The blockchain gets bloated. We've seen it with CryptoKitties, for crying out loud. In 2017, stupid cartoon cats being traded like Digimon on the Ethereum chain was bloating out smart contracts and decentralized exchanges built on Ethereum. This is not a smart way to engineer a protocol. You're doing the exact opposite. The more people who actually join and use this thing, the crappier it does at providing the job you're selling it for. Now imagine if you have the same blockchain for everything. You see blockchains for bananas, blockchains for real estate. The more people who put their real estate on a blockchain means on a decentralized blockchain, why? Why? Like Nico says, you have an oracle problem. There's a house somewhere. Somebody has to take care of the house. Somebody has to prove the house exists. Somebody can go and steal the house. You have the lock on the door? How do you know? Are you going to use a DAO? Are you going to use a DAO? You're going to vote? It's unbelievable how inefficient and stupid it would be to transfer all of these things to a blockchain for absolutely no reason. And he's right. He's right. These things are sold like, oh, you're going to get to be the rent seeker. You're going to get to have this token ahead of time, which all of these people are going to put this money on because they're going to use this system, when the only people who are actually using the system are the people who think they're going to get rich off real estate tokens. A good example was actually the Helium token. And this, I was actually reminded, I reached out to the Audionauts, and it was BTK who actually, shout out to him for reminding me what this was, because I could not remember the project. I thought I had saved a really good thread on details and stuff. It's got to be somewhere. I hate it when I lose stuff like this. But it was about Helium. I can't remember the specifics of any of the important details, so I'll sum up that essentially it was hailed as such a great example of what quote-unquote crypto can do as like a utility token or as an alternative use case for money. And the attempt was to have the quote-unquote miners of the network be providing infrastructure for mesh networks. So that's essentially what the service was being, it was supposed to subsidize the build out of a mesh network. And all these people got all this hardware and all these things because this was going to be huge and everybody's going to use the mesh network. And they were all quote unquote mining. They were running the algorithm for this thing to provide infrastructure for the mesh network. And they were getting paid all this yield and they thought they were having this huge return. And then the token price, started to decline and their yield, quote unquote, started to decline. And after like a year and a half, like after like a ridiculously long time in this, like the actual network traffic that was occurring was like such a tiny fraction of what was being paid out as to be completely irrelevant. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like almost all of it was just token printing. It was just issuing the new token in order to subsidize people setting up all these machines, and nobody was using the network. And this is like one of those things that we see over and over and over in the crypto and blockchain space. It is the economics of the utility token idea. It's like, why would I go to Walmart to buy something if they made me get a token that fluctuated on the market to buy stuff in Walmart? The same goes for any service, any network, any piece of software, because all of those things actually get worse. You're talking about something that has the fewest possible barriers in an environment of everybody is instant gratification, that we're going to make it so people have to risk capital and quote-unquote invest in this service to be able to use the service. Like, that is never going to be sustainable. If the service itself is of any value, somebody's just going to make it without the token. And in the context of, like, real estate or art, like, it's so funny. Like, the elephant in the room, like Nico's argument that he kind of sums it up with, is such a great point. Like, the only reason these things have become popular stores of value is because money sucks at its job. Money is no longer providing the one major function that money is supposed to provide as the universal medium by which we hold the promise for future resources that are owed to us. Like, that is all money is. It's a promise. And the question is, what fulfills that promise best? And when you have a promise that is explicitly lied about, that is explicitly corrupted by the quote-unquote issuers of the promise, well, then it doesn't do its job. The only reason people use it is because you're going to get beaten if you don't. You're going to go to prison if you don't accept the currency. It's like Warren Mosler, who's a famous MMTer, is actually responsible for one of the best explanations. He talked about, it was like in a presentation or whatever that he gave, that he said, the only reason fiat has any value is because I force you to pay me in it in order to get out of this room. Like, if we locked the doors and I said, it's going to cost you 30 of these tokens in order to get out of here, and I'm going to force you to pay me for any work that you do in these tokens, well, then I'm gonna have a great market to sell my tokens because I have proof of violence. I have proof that you're a prisoner unless you pay me this. That's taxes. That's the forced market for a crap currency. But that is literally what Bitcoin is designed to solve. That is why Bitcoin is such a potent thing on the global stage, because it is a monetary, it is the highest possible monetary assurance without any of the liability of a trusted institution. Which means, if Bitcoin works, if any of this works, Bitcoin is going to work. And if Bitcoin works, real estate is going to be demonetized. Real estate is going to plummet because it's being used as a store of value, even though it's a terrible store of value. The idea of purchasing a bunch of houses that people should actually be using for its utility purpose, to live inside of it. The fact that a third of luxury apartments in New York sit empty. They sit empty because rich people are just parking money. Think of the incredible distortion that causes in the markets when real estate is being used as a form of cash. It is cash for rich people, and it's literally savings accounts for the middle class. That makes no sense. There's huge maintenance costs. They literally rot away. It's a terrible store of value. It has all of these problems, the one thing that it can provide is that it is scarce. It's very hard to create a ton more of it. Therefore, it becomes a store of value on the market. You basically start monetizing. You create monetary premiums for things that have some of the characteristics for money, because nothing has all of the characteristics for money, because you explicitly made fiat suck at the one thing that it's really supposed to do. So what's going to get demonetized? Art, real estate, all of these things that everybody wants to tokenize. So why would you keep it? Why would you keep 1/1000th of a London apartment if you could have 1/21,000,000th of the entire economic network? And it doesn't rot, and there's no third party. You don't need an oracle to prove that the London apartment is there. It can't burn down. And you can transfer it immediately and completely to anyone in the world, and it is a bearer asset. They actually own it when you transfer it to them. You don't own your 1/1000th of the London apartment. I mean, think about, like, a timeshare is seen as, like, kind of a joke, right? Is it like, oh, 8 people are going to own this thing together, and you're going to have to negotiate when other people are going to use it? How is it better that you make a 100-person timeshare or a 1,000-person timeshare? Nobody's buying that because they actually want to use it for the reason you would use it. It's like everybody owning part of a sandwich because you just think somebody's going to want the sandwich tomorrow, but nobody's actually going to eat it. And best of all, they think there's going to be some sort of a fluctuating token on the market that you have to buy to actually facilitate this, to actually participate in this ecosystem that you don't know its value over time, that is literally attempting to rent seek off the value of the network that people are going to have to use to own this 1/1000th of the piece of real estate. I don't know. It just doesn't add up to me. I know we've covered this a whole bunch of times on the show, but I just read this piece and I was like, oh yeah, this is a good one. This is a really good quick one to do on the show. I've still got a couple more notes, but Rad is having a hard time. We're transitioning away from the swaddle and he's having a hard time. And I think he can hear me. Every time I start the podcast back up, he's crying again and he's awake. So we're going to close this one out here. Thank you guys for listening. I will have another read tomorrow. I got some fun stuff on the way, like I said. So don't forget to subscribe to the Bitcoin Audible podcast. And of course, a thank you to our amazing sponsors, CoinKite, the solution to all of your Bitcoin hardware problems, Swan Bitcoin, the best Bitcoin onboarding service in the space. And don't forget about Pacific Bitcoin Conference. And of course, the Fold Card. Stack sats on everything in your life. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll catch you on the next one. And until then, everybody, take it easy.
You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.